Father, a police officer, was killed by an African-American while on duty. McCullough responded to the calls Wednesday during an interview on KTRS radio.
We have absolutely no intention of walking away from the duties and the responsibilities entrusted to me by the people of this community. I've done it for 24 years. I've done, if I say so myself, a very good job at that. I'm fair and impartial in every matter that comes before us. So when others come to me and say, you know, we want you to go away, and I understand that. That's certainly they have the ability and the right to do that. But I've tried to direct and say, listen, I'm not going to do that. I am not walking away from this. I've been entrusted with these responsibilities. But I understand, of course, that having declared a state of emergency, Governor Nixon has the authority right now to say McCullough is out of this case.
All of this comes as Officer Wilson remains on paid leave. Meanwhile, a police officer caught on video threatening to kill peaceful protesters in Ferguson has been suspended indefinitely. The video from Tuesday night shows the officer pointing his semi-automatic assault rifle at protesters, saying he'll kill them and telling them to...
This country's safe. We are number one. We don't kick the ass of those who don't agree. And if they don't like it, they can talk to me.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Now we are seeing reports, some of your colleagues in Washington, the Congressional Black Caucus, writing directly to the Attorney General, Congressman William Lacey Clay of Missouri, apparently concerned about, quote, racial profiling in Ferguson, Missouri. Does this help within the investigation, or does this suddenly become a political football in the hands of the Congressional Black Caucus?
Yeah, it sounds like Lacey Clay is saying don't enforce the law. This idea of no racial profiling, I've seen the video. It looks to me like you don't need to bother with that particular factor because they're all appear to be of a single origin, I should say, continental origin might be the way to phrase that. But they're hyper intensity on that. I just reject race based politics, identity politics. I think we're all God's children, and we all should be held to the same standard and the same level of behavior.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know.
started, what were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. White man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente in Pinchina.
Internet Radio from Smart of the Region.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente de Pinchina.
But you have these armored vehicles. They're being given to police departments for a very inexpensive thing. You could have a disaster. They could go through water that's 6-8 feet deep also. You're getting on the real cheap.
I know. And
here's my most important point, and Bernie will stand up for this. They're coming back. They're coming back. These extremist Muslims are coming back, and they're going to do something against the United States.
Right.
And you can't fight with pea shooters.
Think of it this way. If you had a scene in Connecticut or one of these schools or a theater where you have these terrorist events or attacks on the community, mass assaults and murders, you need those vehicles to respond.
But Brian, I'd like to get to the...
And also you have a school shooting, too. I mean, you don't know if it's going to be the Columbine thing with multiple...
They have to be used prudently. But the two points I want to bring out what led up to this. One chilling statement by the police chief down there, the Johnson of Ferguson. He had no idea, he said, that there was a great disconnect between the people and the police. There's a failure in leadership. He should have known. Secondly, Ron Johnson... The statements he made over the weekend, he took sides on this. A person in a command situation shouldn't be doing that.
Here's the captain.
When this is over, I'm going to go in my son's room. My black son. Who wears his pants sagging. Wears his hat cocked to the side. Got tattoos on his arms. But that's my baby.
He also went on to apologize, Commissioner.
You know what? Apologize for what? Grand jury hasn't concluded its investigation yet. You know, you have to wait for the evidence. And Ron Johnson, any prosecutor, any cop knows that. Wait for the evidence.
You know what? We have a thing called due process. What's happening in Chicago? All our young black kids are being shot. Where is the outrage in Chicago? Where's Jesse Jackson? Where's Al Sharpton in Chicago? We got kids killed every day. Black on black crime. You know what? This is a division. What he's doing there is wrong because what we're dividing white and black again. America has no color. It's all one color. We're all Americans. To do something like this before any information has been finalized is wrong. Just maybe the cop was right. Maybe he was getting beat up. We don't know what happened. Also, remember, he got shot in the back. Now it comes up, he was shot in the front. When you're in a shootout, you're firing away. You stop. You're shooting the torso. You're trying to stop somebody. I don't know how he got hit in the head, but bullets go that way. He was trying to stop this guy.
Ron Johnson should be relieved of command down there for this. That's how serious this is. They need someone down there who is unbiased, who's going to take control of the situation and not take sides. What he did was embolden the wrong people. The people of Ferguson are good people. They got good cops. You need somebody to bring everyone together at this point.
Listen, we can go for another 2 hours and still leave things undone. But thanks so much for setting the table, putting this weekend's perspective, and we hope no violence tonight. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Ainsley, take it away.
All right, thank you, Brian. Investigators want to know, was there something in the water?
Internet radio for smart of the region.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, saluton and peace to all the original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous News, thought and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist, anti-nature. This is what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. And we've been dealing with this for as long as we have been in this country. And there are white people left and right who are trying, I mean, they're pulling everything that they can from the sky out of their rectums. They're praying to whatever gods they believe in to help them get away with this one, to help them get through this one. How do you explain this boy being executed in broad fucking daylight for absolutely fucking nothing? And the cop is being protected. But we had the National Guard in there right now protecting the police, who are putting sniper rifles in the faces of reporters, in the faces of children, who are using tear gas. They've already had lies talking about kill the police. It turns out that there was no recording of this. You know, there was no evidence of this. No reporter had heard this. It was a fucking lie. Now they're talking about Molotov cocktails. Where is the evidence of this? Now you have the UN. Ban Ki-moon is saying that the people in Ferguson, Missouri must be protected. You have Sisi now, General Sisi in Egypt, saying that the United States must protect the people of Ferguson, Missouri. Right? You have other countries now clowning the new cat over in Iran. I can't remember his name. He is on his Twitter account is clowning the United States. China is clowning the United States. Thailand, all of these countries that kick ass, right? Saudi, they are all clowning the fucking United States. And do you think that the white people in the United States have any goddamn shame? Do you think they're saying to themselves, well, then, we, you know, how did this happen? How did this get this far? You know, what are we doing here? You know, it's always, don't blame me. I'm not responsible for anything. I didn't do anything. I'm innocent. Let me keep my white privilege and, you know, just go away. Why do you have to change things? Why does anything have to change? Why can't we just leave things alone? Essentially, that's what every white person who's been telling me to get over this is saying. Don't blame me. Don't blame me. But see, the thing is, nobody blamed you individually. Nobody blamed you personally. See, the thing is, you know you're motherfucking responsible. You claim that you made the fucking world. You claim that God looks just like you. That white Jesus in these fucking churches and all these stupid ass black and Asian and fucking Indian, you know, and I say Indian, I'm talking about indigenous people in the Americas. You fools who hang these goddamn white Jesus images in your fucking, you know, temples of stupidity. Where's that motherfucker right now? Give him a shave and a goddamn haircut and he looks just like any of these cops that are out here damaging our fucking people. You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you motherfuckers that want to talk bullshit all motherfucking day long about how black you are, how super black you are, you know, this, that, and the motherfucking other thing. Matter of fact, you know what? I need to take a break. That's what the fuck I need. I need to take a fucking break. Because, you know, no, really, where do I go? Where do I go? Where do I go? Where do I go? You know, it's like, you know, what am I supposed to fucking do? You know, you can't criticize your own fucking people, right? You know, they come down on you for saying, if we had kept up the motherfucking activist pressure to begin with, this shit may not have goddamn happened. But no. When I look at the Nielsen ratings, you motherfuckers are watching goddamn sports. Okay? You're worried about what the Kardashians are fucking doing. You know, you're worried about whether or not Paris Hilton left her fucking panties some goddamn place and how much fucking coke she did. Alright? You're worried about JC, who ain't motherfucking worried about you. You're worried about Beyonce, who ain't fucking worried about you. And this is what I'm talking about with that blonde hair bullshit. You think that if you fucking, you know, bleach your motherfucking hair and you get some green goddamn contacts and you spend almost all of your fucking time and money trying to fucking mimic and look like these goddamn people, that the money's somehow gonna come. That you're gonna end up in the Riviera like that. same thing with you, with, you know, with gonna fucking, you know, get on some of these brothers and shit for being with white women because they just happen to find somebody that they could actually be with. I'm gonna tell somebody that's, you know, trying to live the dream, right? You know, that thinks if he gets this white woman that his entire life is gonna straighten out, that somehow the riches are gonna come and all this kind of shit. You understand what I'm saying? You know, I mean, how many sisters, and let's just fucking be honest, how many sisters will talk all this sadity bullshit but then think that their ass is going to take them to the fucking ends of the earth, right? Because, you know, that is their fucking goal, to fuck a rich man and get some, right? Get some of this world, right? So that they don't pay attention to politics. They're more worried about having fun right now. Right, and then when they get old, and then they get fucked up and start having medical problems and shit, then it's like, well, you know, somebody needs to do something for me. You know, the same thing with fucking white folks. They sit around whining all goddamn day long about welfare. They don't want to fucking, you know, pay for welfare. They don't want to pay for schools. They don't want to pay for roads. They don't want to pay for nothing, right? They don't want to pay federal taxes at all. They don't want to pay state taxes. You know, because they think that every nickel is going to a black person or to a brown person someplace. So they don't want to pay nothing. And then as soon as their goddamn, you know, bladder starts to fuck up, or they need a fucking heart operation and shit, they want the world to stop and fucking do something for them. They want everybody to fucking stop and help them. Then it becomes all about them. You know, and then they want to talk to you about Jesus. Right? You know, because now they're in fucking trouble, so help me, right? And they've been watching black people suffer for how many goddamn centuries in this fucking country, and they've done absolutely nothing. And the attitude is, if we let you live, you need to kiss our ass for that. And I'm sorry, brothers and sisters who listen to this fucking show. It's like, I'm sorry. You sit around doing fucking nothing. You're watching nothing. You're listening to nothing. You're doing nothing. Except trying to fucking, yeah, and don't get on me about what people are trying to survive. That's not who I'm talking about. That's not who I'm talking about. Those people who take every fucking dime that they have to try to put food on the table, that's not who the fuck I'm talking about, and you know that that's not who the fuck I'm talking about. I'm talking about you suckers with the iPhones. I'm talking about you suckers that have a Lexus. I'm talking about you motherfuckers that got 16 fucking credit cards that you're paying the minimum on. That's what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm talking about you fuckers with goddamn degrees. I'm talking about you motherfuckers that have an access on MSNBC, CBS, right? Bloomberg, wherever the fuck you work. See, Don Lemon was, you know, he was the same one. You know, he's one of the motherfuckers that's what made this shit possible. Now, they pushed his ass around the other day, and now he's angry about it. Well, too motherfucking late, brother. Too fucking late, brother. It's been happening to the rest of us for a long motherfucking time. And seeing you felt that being a goddamn Uncle Tom and promoting the fact that you're a fucking Uncle Tom was going to protect you from what the fuck is happening out here in the street. And seeing here, you got all these fucking cameras. What did they say? A $50,000 camera will protect you from being abused by the police? Well, he works for fucking CNN. And they still pushed his ass around, and he was still fucking threatened. So what the fuck? Alright, so now that he's had a black experience, let's see what the fuck he says now. Or is he going to be like Skip Gates, who had his black experience? Alright, now we're talking about an Uncle Tom that goes, when he moves into a new fucking community, it's not me, he admits this his motherfucking self. He goes to the local police station and basically registers. Says, if you see me, I'm a highfalutin motherfucking, you know, professor at your local large-ass university. I'm not one of these badass niggas you need to worry about. You don't need to be afraid when you see me. Now, if you see somebody else that looks like the angry Indian, well, that's a different thing. Ask him what he's doing around here. You know, but if you see me, I live here. You understand? So, no, I don't have no respect for that motherfucker. Fuck a Skip Gates and fuck a Don Lemon. Because, see, he has, you know, now he understands what the fuck is going on. Because they got to his ass. Because he was coming up with the fucking idea that somehow if you wear a fucking shirt and tie and a sport jacket, that this shit does not happen to you. And I'm telling you as a fucking witness, it does motherfucking happen to you. It does fucking happen to you. I don't wear trainers. You dig? I wear proper fucking shoes. You know what I'm saying? To look at me is to look at like a Don Lemon. You understand what I'm saying? And they stop you whenever the fuck they decide to fucking stop you. And they harass you when they decide to motherfucking harass you. They do what the fuck they want to do. And you could be standing with a crowd of motherfucking white people and they will make a beeline to your ass. It happens. I know. So, you know, when Don Lemon and all these other goddamn Uncle Toms and shit talk that bullshit, I don't want to motherfucking hear. And see, and it's too easy to even pick on a Don Lemon. See, Don Lemon put his fucking, you know, his head out there to give a long ass motherfucking speech on what was wrong with niggas, right? Right? And then he got mad because he got clowned for it. Now, this is just after he came out, in which he was supported by the black community for that shit for the most part. And, what's that? Oh, what the? Look, you know it's going to be some alpha male motherfucker who especially is into sports and shit. And it's a stereotype because, yeah, but these motherfuckers live up to the stereotype, right? Yeah, I know. We were looking on your Facebook, you know, what they were saying about him when he came out, right? And it's like, okay, fine, you know. That was really minuscule compared to the amount of support that he got. The same thing, what was it, Joe Sam, I don't give a fuck about sports, but, you know, yeah, there was negatives, but he was also pretty, you know, he was respected by, again, the educated, I got a job, I got a car, I want to have a mortgage type shit, right? You know, I want to be one of those niggas that you look up to type motherfuckers and shit. Yeah, you know, they look up to a Don Lemon for coming out and doing that, and I believe he has a white partner, so they look up to him for that too. Let's just be real. You know, that's just the way it is. Now, you know, that's all well and good. But see, he went and said what the fuck he said as if, you know, abuse doesn't happen to him. See, he was more concerned about being gay than about being black. And not understanding that the two of them fucking not necessarily weren't the same, but they both deal with motherfucking oppression. And you can't address one without goddamn addressing the other. Because if you think that there's no fucking racism within the mainstream gay community, which is white, you're motherfucking insane. All you have to do is ask any fucking honest gay person of fucking color whether or not there's racism in the gay community. Of course there is. There always was. I mean, Audre Lorde talked about this at length. You know, Dinah Washington talked about this. You know, I mean, it is not exactly like it's a big fucking secret. But, you know, let's just pretend that these problems don't exist, right? So, you know, Don Lemon, again, I'm not picking on Don Lemon because he is not the only fucking one. And to be honest with you, I can't even remember the names of a lot of these niggas because I don't watch their TV shows. Oh, I can't hear you. Say what? Steve Harvey? Yeah, fuck it, Steve Harvey. I don't give a fuck about Steve Harvey. No. He was out here not too long ago saying Obama was doing a fantastic job, a fine job, and he was, you know, downing everybody who didn't, in the African community, who didn't support Obama. And, no. See, because where's his ass while this is going on? Where is he? Where's Beyonce? Where's Jay-Z? You know, where's Immortal Technique? Well, Immortal Technique, he's on, fucking Alex Jones' show, right? Like Larry Pinkney on fucking, you know, and who else now? This is, you know, I have lost, you know, I mean, Dick Gregory? What the fuck is Dick Gregory doing on Alex Jones' show? What the fuck is going on? Here you have these people who claim to be black revolutionaries and shit, and they're sitting with Alex Jones. Alex Jones said that the Trayvon Martin thing didn't happen. He said it was a hoax. He said he didn't even believe that anybody got shot. And of course he supported Zimmerman. He still supports Zimmerman. And he said that when he did cop on and say that it really happened, he said that Trayvon Martin was a thug. But they go on his show to talk about what? Racism and police brutality? I mean, you know, Dick Gregory, you know, I mean, that whole black president thing, you know, that was bad enough. And I don't want to diss the man. But, you know, check your goddamn facts, bro. And Larry Pinkney, I don't know what the fuck was going on with you. And same thing with Immortal Technique. You know, what the fuck is going on? You guys have got to get off this any media is good media thing. You see, because, you know, I got white motherfuckers coming to me on Twitter and shit and trying to get on the podcast talking about, well, you know, being a Nazi really doesn't mean that I'm anti-black. What? You know, I mean, this is how ridiculous things have gotten. And then the fucking Klan has interjected themselves into this shit. They're collecting money as a reward for this motherfucking officer, Darren Wilson, right? And they've decided that they're going to march down to Ferguson because they figure, well, hey, Eric Holder's going down there, right? So, you know, we're going to go. They said they're going to go to protect the white businesses. You would think of all the bullshit that they'd be talking about, the Constitution and this, that, and the other, they'd be going down to protect the people of Ferguson, right? But no, that's not going to happen. They're going to go help the police. Just like the National Guard is down there helping the police, right? I mean, the State Patrol came in to help the police. Dig what I'm saying? I mean, nobody's down there for Ferguson. And see, and the leadership of Ferguson, they're scared to really say any goddamn thing, and you can't blame them for this. You can't fault them for this. They're talking very carefully because they're fucking scared. They're living under guns. And, you know, and I'm hearing a lot of black people talk a lot of bullshit. Well, then pick up your ass, get on a fucking Greyhound and go to Ferguson. But see, the thing is, you need to be standing up wherever the fuck you are, though. And I call them people punks because they're fucking, you know, kind of scared to go out in the street. It seems to me like the whole goddamn community's out there, so I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. And see, it's that type of riff-raff, you know, fucking, chatter that I'm really not goddamn interested in. And this is why I didn't even want to talk about the subject, because I don't know what to say. I don't have anything to add to this. What am I supposed to tell my black listeners? What can I tell you? You know, duck? I mean, what the fuck else can I do? Put your arms up and hope that they don't motherfucking shoot you? I mean, I suppose, right? Because, you know, the law's not going to help you. The president's not going to help you. The Justice Department's not going to fucking help you. The National Guard's not going to goddamn help you. The UN wants to help you, but what the fuck can they do? Right? Right? I mean, I would love to see some Canadian peacekeepers cross that goddamn divide and come down here and say, hey, the human rights of people in Ferguson, Missouri will be recognized, and we're going to have an international criminal fucking tribunal to understand what happened, and we're going to take the trial outside of the United States and hold it at The Hague. You see? That's what needs to happen. That's what should have happened to begin with. And if they had went through procedure and hadn't tried to protect this police officer, right, if they weren't trying to get him out of Dutch, we wouldn't even be looking at this goddamn situation. And then while they want to tell people to stand up like they did in Tiananmen, what the hell is happening here? Don't talk to me about Tiananmen Square. Don't talk to me about human rights in China. Don't talk to me about human rights in Afghanistan and Iraq. I don't want to hear it. We don't even have rights here. So I'm not fucking interested. You dig what I'm saying? I'm not fucking interested. And, you know, at this point, I should just stop because, you know, really, I don't know what the fuck to say. I don't know what to say. You know, I mean, every woman, every black woman out here in the United States that has another fucking black, you know, son, it's like must feel like a sucker. And I'm sorry, my sister, but I know it because, I speak to you and I look at your eyes. You all feel like fools. And, you know, I feel... No, it's like, what can I do? I can't do anything. No, I'm witnessing this shit, and I can't do anything. My hands are tied. My tongue is tied. I can't do anything. We're witnessing a fucking genocide, and nothing is fucking being done about it. All right? And the only thing I can tell you, dear listener, especially my listeners of color, the only way that this is going to stop, you know this, and I know this, is to literally stand up. Now, I'm not telling you how to stand up. That's your decision. But you're going to have to stand up at some point, some motherfucking where. And for all of you white folks that talk a lot of shit about being anti-racist and you're not a bigot, well, you know, this is the time to fucking prove it. This is the time to fucking prove it. You have the fucking social power. You know this. So let's stop, you know, beating around the fucking mulberry bush. Let's stop playing motherfucking games. You know who has the fucking power. You do. And if you really wanted this racism to fucking stop, if you wanted police brutality to stop, if you wanted the fucking violence against black people to stop, you see, you would have done something about it a long time ago. But you're so busy trying to preserve motherfucking privilege, you were willing to risk losing us. You're willing to use us as cannon fodder. You keep what you got going. That is why what is happening in Palestine is happening. I mean, do you know that the same tear gas canisters that are being used in Palestine are being used in Ferguson, Missouri? And you want to sit there and tell me, right, with your Muslim sounding name, right, you want to sit and tell me that these things are not connected? While you stand there, sucking on a chew stick, holding your groin, wearing some fucking, up-to-date goddamn camouflage of your enemy while you talk shit, and you're going to tell me that I waste more time writing about Palestine than I do about here? Motherfucker, you don't even read my work. What are you talking about? See, these are the conversations I'm actually getting into over the coffee. You know, people who don't even fucking know me don't even know what the fuck I do, who are not activists themselves, but are then telling everybody else what the fuck they should be doing about Ferguson. And it's like, wait a minute, where the fuck were you before this shit happened? It's not like Oscar Grant, how long ago was that? And how many of you forgot? Sean Bell, how many of you forgot? Ayanna Jones, Derek Jones, how many of you forgot? How many of you forgot? Did I mention Sean Bell already? How about that other cat? Was it upstate New York somewhere? Ex-Marine, shot to death by police in his own home? Where there was no emergency, he had no weapon, they tased him and they shot him. I mean, how many times does this have to happen before somebody's like, okay, we have a problem? But see, if you're white and you're thinking that is not a problem, you're the problem. And if you're black and you think that, paying attention and waiting for Jay-Z, Jesus, or Obama to save you is going to work, that's your part of the problem too. Let's just face it, man, if there's a hell below, it seems that we're all going to go. And none of us are going to get out of this one. And for you cowardly white sons of bitches who are out here just basically trying to put it all on black people, motherfucker, get a grip. This shit is the world that you motherfucking made. Take responsibility for what the fuck you did. If you want it fixed, then fix it. If you don't want to fucking fix it yourselves, then get the fuck out of our way and let us goddamn deal with it. But that's the fucking problem too, isn't it? Every time we've ever tried to do anything for ourselves, be it a medical fucking clinic, be it a fucking library, be it a housing program, any motherfucking thing, white people come and they fuck it up. Because we're not supposed to have our own fucking shit. That is the attitude. And until we start being honest about this, and until white people start being honest about how their system has been trying to maintain itself, don't dare ask me again over coffee. Alright? Or while I'm waiting for the fucking light to change, what am I gonna fucking do about it? When you haven't done an activist motherfucking thing in your goddamn miserable fucking life. You've never done a fucking thing for anybody other than your fucking self unless you were fucking forced to. Fuck you. And for those people in Ferguson who don't want any outside help, who want to limit this, well, I'm sorry, but see, you're part of the problem too, because once they started rolling in tanks, it was beyond Ferguson. The UN is involved in this now. Egypt is talking shit about this now. The Palestinians were the first to say something about it because they could see the goddamn parallels. This is beyond Ferguson at this motherfucking point. And if you think you can do this shit by yourself, you're wrong. And see, and that's the motherfucking problem. You're letting white people dictate how this shit is supposed to fucking go. Now, it's one thing for people who are not living there to come in and try to countermand, what it is that you're trying to do. They should take your lead. But do not, be as ridiculous politically as to say that people should need to basically let Ferguson deal with it, because what you're basically doing is saying you don't want justice. You don't really want justice. You just want to play it safe. And we've been playing it safe. Rosewood, Duluth, Tulsa. I mean, how many more things have to happen like this? How many more things have to happen like this? Now, I don't know what the activist situation is there. And I'm sure there have been people there that have been talking ever since the civil rights movement came to Ferguson in 1968. Okay? They had serious violence down there. This is not a disrespect to the people of Ferguson. I'm just saying, let's be honest. We are not active enough. We're waiting for somebody to come and save us. It ain't going to fucking happen. Jesus is not in Ferguson. And if he is, he's helping the police. He's not helping the people. Get real. The system ain't working for you on earth or in heaven. So start to figure out what the fuck will work. This is the Angry Indian. and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante. Porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 97.9 en FM.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare, including reproductive health, was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Hi, this is Annie from Avoir Simone. You're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast.
Night of Pain. Night of Rage. Once again, a black unarmed youth has been killed by a cop. And while the facts surrounding the shooting are presently unclear, what's clear is that a cop shot 18-year-old Michael Brown eight times. Eight times, according to at least one eyewitness. Brown was shot as he stood with his hands up in the air. To anyone who knows American history, this is not a rarity. It is the result of a systematic function of police across the nation to repress, target, and track the nation's black population. That has been the case for generations. We shall see voices trotted out to call for calm as outrage arises in black hearts in response to outrageous treatment. Never do those calling for calm become voices calling for true justice. For they have no influence over the repressive forces, and in fact, no political office in America does. They have been paid off, bought off, or both. Listen to the voices of black politicians. Indeed, listen to the voices of white politicians. Listen to the ringing silence. Needed in Ferguson, near St. Louis, Missouri, and in every black community in America, are independent and uncompromising black revolutionary collectives determined to protect the lives and well-being of black people, period. Existing political structures, silent in the face of these outrages, have failed us and cannot be made to serve our interests. It's time to learn from this and build for our future necessities. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people and blowing up buildings.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, Angry Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Internet Radio for Smarter Originals.
Before the hour, a number here is 877-996-2556. Pamela is in Christians, Virginia. Hey, Pamela.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Kathy.
Hey.
I listen to you guys every night, and Mike, I definitely appreciate your voice. Sometimes you are me without a filter, and I appreciate that because at least it feels like I'm not screaming to the wind by myself.
So, I hear you.
But I wanted to speak to you tonight about the Michael Brown situation. I feel like as far as the military things that these police are having, this country has declared war on her brown and black citizens, and we are outgunned, we are out-vocalized, we are outfunded. And so our only recourse is to kind of take to the streets. And I wish with all my heart that in the black and brown community, we did this type of thing before such a tragedy occurred. Because it's passing. It's just kind of like the Trayvon Martin thing. We were so upset about it. We were just rallying about it. And then it kind of ebbed and everybody went back to their lives. But we will never change anything if that's what we do. But my biggest thing is I'm a mom and I worry for my son. I worry for my husband. I worry for my brothers, but I worry for my son because he's a little brown boy and Mike, he's beautiful. He is beautiful. He's so smart and he's so sweet and he loves his mom and he takes care of his sisters. And he wants to be an engineer when he grows up. But I don't know what the world will bring to him and who he will be when he's 16 or 18 or 19. And I am so afraid to send my son out into the world not being able to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be one of those moms that are saying, you know, this is my baby and I loved him and he's great. And why can't the world see that he's great, you know? And I know that just talking to my friends, all of us, you know, mothers, that's our fear, you know? And my husband and I, we try to, just like any other family, we try to instill in our kids values and yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and you honor your elders and you get your education and all of that. But whenever I send him out of the door and he is out of my sight, I am so afraid because I don't know what the world will do to him.
That is, it's my understanding, that's a real common fear of black parents, very common fear. Let me add one thing, Pamela, when you talk about this war declared on black and brown people. There's also been a war declared on whites who are not in the upper economic strata, and that's more of an economic war, a racial war. This is my opinion again. Yes, you're right. It has been declared on people who are not Caucasian. An economic war has been declared on the rest of us. And I know a lot of people think I beat the same dead horse night after night, but I'll tell you, the economic model that we're all supposed to work under in this country, capitalism, that teaches divisiveness and attitudes against girls, attitudes against old people, attitudes against people of color, attitudes against white folk that didn't go to the top school, you know, this whole thing about capitalism that doesn't teach cooperation. It teaches people to be so competitive that the only result of that at some point is just unrestrained anger. I sense this anger. I feel it myself. I see it when I'm out and about. I see it when I go to the grocery store, when I'm driving down the street. And it's coming from so many people. It's like, I have to stop taking
that. I agree with you. I agree with you 110%. And I feel like the country that we live in right this minute, America right now, we are no better. We are such hypocrites. We go around the world and we tell people how to treat their girls. We tell people how to treat their women. When women here are under this as much, it may not be so much as religious right now, it's getting there, but anytime as a woman I have to fight for a constitutional right, and then the United States goes to Africa and say you need to educate your girls, we are such hypocrites. On every level, economically, we have no justice economically. We have no voice economically. Because people are living paycheck to paycheck, and then there's that 1% who has all the voice. And I love the stories that you do on the Koch brothers, because it's so true. Every single thing about it is so true. And you're right, it's not just racial. It is economic.
Well,
and I remember when...
Go. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I remember growing up, I read a story and I think his name is Willie Lynch. I grew up in Lynchburg, Virginia. But I read a story where it was saying that the best way to keep people enslaved is to divide them. So you put
Absolutely.
The man against the woman, the mother, you know, that type of thing. And that, it just, it's so evident, even more so now. And I think that we are so stupid. I'm so sorry to say it. But we are so easily pacified. It's like, ooh, shiny. And our attention goes to the most ignorant, mundane. I don't care what Kim Kardashian is doing.
Right.
But for me to turn on the news and that's like 98% of what the so-called news is, that's why I don't turn my TV on. Because it's stupid. We're so dumbed down and we're okay with being dumb.
You know, I in no way mean to minimize the violence that's perpetrated against black folk. When I talk about economic violence being perpetrated against other folks as well as black folks, I'm not trying to claim an issue here. The issue at hand is the murder of young black males on the street. As the
three in the past week,
well,
Mike.
That's what I'm saying, and that seems to be the crowning, the crowning atrocity. There are other atrocities that appear below that. So I'm not trying to say that, white folks suffer too, because that's not true.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you, as a mom of a young black boy, how do you deal with the fear? I have some fear. I have a 10-year-old white daughter, and I have some fears about what kind of sexual violence she may come in contact with. And I'm doing my damnedest to try to get her, first of all, to understand that it exists, and secondly, how to not deal with it, not even 10 seconds of it. If she sees it in the fifth grade or when she gets to college, to not deal with it in that moment. So I have to ask you, how do you deal with the kind of violence that your little boy is going to face in the world. How do you deal with your fears, what I'm trying to get to?
I have daughters too, so I do that with them as far as how you are with Molly. But that's a lot easier because we can empower them. With my son, I have to teach him caution. And I have to trust that he will hear my voice if he's ever in that situation. I have to teach him humility. I have to tell him even when you're right, sometimes you just have to take it. You have to walk away. And that breaks my heart to have to tell him that. But I would rather him be humble than be dead.
Mm.
So I don't want to demasculate my son. I don't want to tell him on the one hand, you're a man, and there are certain responsibilities that you have as a man. But at the same time, I have to let him know there are certain people who are going to not see you as a man.
Mm.
They're going to see you as other than. And I tell all of my kids, you have to be the best of the best in this country to be considered second best,
mm-hmm.
just because of the color of your skin. You have no leeway. You have no way for mistakes. And that's kind of hard for kids. It really is, because there's so much pressure on them to be aware that he can get away with things. And we live in Christiansburg.
Mm.
And it's like there are probably 6 black people here and 5 of them are in my family.
Mm.
So I have to very early tell him, you know, you can't get away with things. He's in the second grade now. He will say something and get in trouble, but then tell me, but mommy, so-and-so said it too. And I'm like, baby, I know, but unfortunately it's different. And then I have to explain to him why it's different.
Damn.
And then I have to deal with his anger. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. When little black kids see, the minute we recognize that we're different and that different doesn't make us special, that anger sets in. That sadness, that heartbreak sets in, because it's like, you want us to do the right thing, but even when we do the right thing, we're still not good enough. And black men deal with that every day. My husband deals with that every day. When he leaves his house, he has to put on what he calls his white face.
Mm.
And that makes him more acceptable mm-hmm. to the rest of the world.
Pamela,
the world is going to knock him.
Can you hold on a second? I've got to do a break here, but I don't want to let you go just yet. If you can just hold on through this break, and then we'll come back and finish this discussion. We're talking to Pamela in Christian, Virginia, who is the mom of some daughters and some sons, or a son. And I want to continue this when we come back. Stay with us. 10 before the hour. We're talking about the ongoing situation, not just in Ferguson, Missouri, but across the country. During the break here, I'm watching some of the live video on CNN, and all of a sudden, I see a lot of people marching, peacefully marching in Ferguson, but finally now, and I'm not saying it just happened tonight, but I'm finally seeing white folks marching with black folks in Ferguson. I don't know what that means, except it's about damn time. We're talking with Pamela in Christiansburg, Virginia. Pamela, have you heard of Carol Taylor's book, The Little Black Book?
No, I've not heard of it.
You need to get that. It's Black Male Survival in America.
Okay.
And it's subtitled Staying Alive and Well in an Institutionally Racist Society. Carol Taylor, if I remember, she is a journalist and a nurse, black woman, but she wrote this book. I have not read it yet, but I've had a couple of friends, black friends, who have told me that, parents who have gotten this book for their sons. It's just called The Little Black Book by Carol Taylor. And one of my listeners just sent me an instant message and said, tell Pamela in Christiansburg if she doesn't know about this book to get it for her son. I do. I recommend it. The Little Black Book. But phone call with you so abruptly, what you've said tonight has been very eloquent, especially what you're talking about. When you're talking about these fears that you have about a black son, I've heard that before. I've heard it from friends who are trying to raise a little black man in this society, and how you how you do it. I don't know. I don't know how to do it. It doesn't make any difference if a black male has PhD after his name. It doesn't make any difference what his economic status is. The first thing that is seen in this society is skin color.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely difficult. My husband is highly educated, has degrees, works for a huge company. But every day he comes home and I have to heal him. Mm. I have to hold him. I have to nurture him. Because when he steps out of that door, he's not a husband. He's not a father. He's not a man that provides for his family. He's black.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. And he's dealt with like that. And it's so, if he goes out of the house and he's in jeans and a t-shirt or sweatpants or something, it's almost like, oh my God, he's a thug. He wears a suit to work every day. Mm-hmm. And only when he's seen in the suit is he given some kind of acknowledgement that he might not be, you know, some run-amok black dude, mm-hmm. you know? And so I see that hurt in him. And I've seen it in my dad. I've seen it in my brothers. I've seen it in my black male friends. So this is something that, and I don't think a lot of white people get that. That they deal with this every single day. So if that's my husband who's educated, take a young black man who grew up in the inner city who has very little, if any, options and magnify that anger mm-hmm. and to a point where he cannot adjust. He can't put on his white face, as my husband says, and adapt. Mm-hmm. That anger is going to spill out all over the place. And then for the police, people who are supposed to protect us, to say, we don't value you either, what is there for them?
Mm-hmm. The police are there. I think most of us understand now that the police are there to protect property.
Absolutely.
They're not there.
A corporation is more of a person than you or I ever will be at mm-hmm. this point, Mike.
Let me ask you something. I've said this several times over the years. I usually say it just in kind of a gratuitous, throwaway manner. Sometimes I really do believe it. Other times I don't know if I believe it or not. But I've said before that given the history of this country, that and this embedded racism, that there is just seems like there's no way to get fully past it. That the only way it's ever going to be destroyed is by blurring the lines of black folk and white folk in this country. And that means marrying one another and having children with one another. Now, that has irritated the hell out of some of my black friends and whites. So I don't know. That was suggested to me. I didn't come up with that myself. That was suggested to me by a black friend years ago. He said, he just said, Malloy, the only way this is ever going to end is to break the color line so that it doesn't exist anymore. What do you say?
Well, let me have you think about this. That is one solution. But then again, Mike, it is such a disservice to us as black people because our history, our culture, everything about us is so rich and we have so much to offer. And it's all, and I don't want to use the word dilute, but that's in an essence what that would be. That's us in one more way saying to white people, hey, accept us. We want you to accept us so bad that we're willing to dilute who we are. I don't want that. I love my blackness. I love being a black woman. I love my daughters being black women and my little boy, and I want them to embrace it, and I want them to enjoy it, and I want them to live, but I also want them to live in a country that won't kill them for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if, you know, Nixon races, I'm not sure, you know, that's whoever thinks. But as a long-term solution, I just don't think that is beneficial because we will lose so much as a nation. And for the same people who are crying out that we need to be so xenophobic against these little kids, you know, that's coming to the country, they are going to die. And they're probably going to die a lot sooner than those little kids.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to just say we give up on who we are just so we can be accepted.
Pamela, that's a great answer, and I do appreciate it. I appreciate your phone call. Thank you so much for calling
this. Thank you for having me.
Touch, all right?
I sure will. Thank you. And thanks, Kathy. You guys have a great night.
Okay, you too. Take care. All right, we'll be back after the break. If you're on hold, we'll take your phone call. One open line. Do stay with us. 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Go ahead, ready?
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices, and many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian, and it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian, too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment. Or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love animals and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm True Whitaker.
And we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together. Become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the 7 generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
Песня «Порвали парус». Некоторые мои друзья считают, что эта песня абстрактная. Но я в нее вкладывал вполне конкретное содержание. Вот и знал, про что пишу. И я просто уверен, что вы все поймете, о чем эта песня. А у дельфина зарезано брюхо винтом, выстрела в спину не ожидает никто. На батарее нету снарядов, уже надо быстрее. На вираже парус, порвали парус. Каюсь, каюсь, каюсь. Даже в дозоре можешь не встретить врага. Это не горе, если болит нога. Петли дверные многим скрипят, многим поют. Кто вы такие? Вас здесь не ждут. Парус, порвали парус. Каюсь, каюсь, каюсь. Многие лета тем, кто поет во сне, все части света могут гореть в огне, все континенты могут лежать на дне, только все это не по мне. Но парус, порвали парус, каюсь, каюсь, каюсь.
This is FSNN reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression, and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid from The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
That's right, hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, you will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin, cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear, you will behold, in great shock and in absolute dumbfoundedness, Morans of all variety. Right-wing Morans, Republican Morans, Libertarian Morans, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger-eaters, John Bircher. Did I get the Birchers? I got the Birchers. Morans, Morans, Morans. Yes, indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming. This is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them, tell much. Yeah. Head for the hills and you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
And it's a fact. It is a sure enough fact. It is hard enough. And I mean, I say that as somebody who's sitting behind a microphone somewhere. I'm not in Ferguson, Missouri. Neither are you, unless you haven't. But we've got St. Louis area listeners who are probably closer to Ferguson than they care to be. To sit behind a microphone and say, that's bad in Ferguson. Well, yeah, it is. But you can't even begin to approach a full comprehension of it. Or you know, what people are going through. We're sitting out here and our guts are twisting. We're sitting out here and it looks like a wreck. And it only got worse over the weekend. There had been a modicum of calm restored, and then it all started back downhill again with the release of the strong-armed robbery tape, which mysteriously just showed up in police hands. Interestingly enough, the lawyer, the owner of the little store where the whoever it was took the cigarillos, lawyered up, and the lawyer came out and said, "Hey, they didn't call the cops. They didn't tell any surveillance. But they didn't even turn in a criminal complaint. They've been a part of this community for years. What?" Yeah. But nonetheless, you can't unring a bell. And that video was out there of some big guy, white t-shirt, short pants. Were they? I don't even remember now. The one thing I do remember is the red baseball cap. In fact, at one point in time, the fella turns, and you can see that it's a St. Louis Cardinals baseball cap. On the other hand, video has also been making the rounds of young Michael Brown dead in the middle of the street, left to lay there, and it seems to be that the simile that most people are using is like a dead dog, like a dog that's been shot in the street and just left, laid there for more than 4 hours. But as he laid there for more than 4 hours, and in the video that the cell phone video that shot, that is not, it's far less grainy, say, than the Zapruder film. And it's just a few blocks from the store where the alleged burgling of the cigarillos took place. You know what's not in the frame? The really glaringly obvious red St. Louis Cardinals baseball hat. It ain't there. And, interestingly, the person who created the video footage, we're still learning some sort of, we're trying to come up with a video, not we, me, or me and Berg, or me and the fans, no, collectively. We're trying to come up with some way to refer to video that doesn't use the ancient antic footage. There is no more footage. What would it be? Streamage? Pixelation? I don't know. But anyway, the one thing that is not there in the view of the video of Michael Brown's blasted dead body laying in the middle of the street is a red Cardinals hat. And it's not anywhere else in the scene because the camera pans left, pans right, pans back. It ain't there. Now, it is conceivable that he is laying on top of it, bleeding onto it, being dead on top of it. Seems kind of unlikely, though, seeing how An autopsy report indicates that he was shot in the head at a downward angle, and that the bullet went through his head, came out, and went back into him, striking his collarbone. Interesting angle. So, all of that. And then, of course, the declaration of curfew, the calling in of the National Guard, and lots more trouble last night. And not just, even to say not just is unfair, but not only trouble for the people who continue to stand in the streets of Ferguson, Missouri, demanding justice, demanding accountability, demanding transparency, demanding answers, demanding to know why the Ferguson Police Department and the rest of the governmental structure gave the cop a head start. You know, the one that shot Michael Brown 6 times. Well, no charges, no nothing. But lo and behold, trouble for journalists too. This might be a good time, this Morian Monday, to remind folks that who noted it last week, maybe was it you, Ron and Raleigh, that the United States is something like 47th for press freedom in the United States. Well, here's why. Or here's part of why. According to a report from TPM LiveWire, during the unpleasantness of last night, can we co-opt the word troubles? During the troubles last night, the police decided to get macho with journalists again. And by that I mean you'll hear what I mean. Vines. And it's used for really short little clips of video of people, apparently, if what my son shows me is to be believed, short little video clips of people doing stupid things. Well, maybe it's grown up. Maybe it's come into its own. Here, you remember... Remember Captain Ron Johnson that everybody got so excited about because he was going to bring peace and healing to Ferguson, Missouri? Well, it turns out he's not any too crazy about the journalists either.
Handcuffs on. Put the handcuffs on. Put the handcuffs on. You're under arrest. Put the handcuffs on. handcuffs on him. Right now.
Yeah. You're under arrest. Put the handcuffs on him. How did that happen? That was Neil Munshie. Just cuffed and searched as we said we were leaving as he asked. Johnson was following us, saying, bring the cuffs. There were three of us. He said the journo was under arrest. We started walking. He followed. He said, he's under arrest. Bring the car. Bring the car. He was tense. He seemed to realize it wasn't a great look, and he had them release us after cuffing and searching. Another cop was apologetic. Well, as long as they apologized. Robert Klemko, one of the three. Cops stopped us. We explained ourselves. They said to walk away. We said, why? They said, command center was attacked. I said, no, it wasn't. Captain Johnson said, walk away or be arrested. I started walking away. They followed and arrested us. The entire goal was to document police action toward protesters. Johnson wouldn't let us enter a visibly secured area. Rob Crilly tweeted, Captain Johnson furious at journalists getting in the way. Johnson has now ordered my handcuffs off along with two others. I gather we are free now. And by the way, it does turn out that some of the folks who sit behind desks and read the news occasionally like to go out and report it. Kudos then to Chris Hayes, who went to Ferguson, Missouri to report on the story. Riot cop to me just a few minutes ago, get back, or next time you're going to be the one maced. Post was there as well, and she said, police getting mad when media goes up past their line tells us we'll get maced next time we do that. Well, shucks, Amanda. I mean, at least they're not going to shoot you six times. Well, wait, they might. And you might recall that the one night's audio was that documented the firings of the flashbangs and the tear gas, and he was the only one who had live video, live broadcast. That was from KARG, Argus Radio. A reporter there, Mustafa Hussein, was trying to do some Fourth Estate First Amendment journalism work. And here's what people heard live there.
Get the fuck out of here! Just get that light up! And you're getting self-attacked!
The light's off!
Get that off! Move it on! Get the fuck out of here! You're in the wrong way!
I got it. I don't know. I want to know. I want to know the name of that officer.
Calm down. Calm down. Don't turn that light on because they can't see.
Okay, the light is off. But he came right over here and told me, get the fuck out of here. I will shoot you with this.
Okay,
sure, well,
he's
I can't, the lights turned out, but the light is not a threat, as you guys keep saying. I'm going to keep the light off, officer. I promise you, I will keep the light off. But I was just threatened by that officer, and I am a member of the media.
Where's your car at?
My car is right here.
Give me a car. I will bring it over to the
office. Okay, yes, please. Bring it over to the office. And I want you, officer, I'm asking you, I'm asking need to go give me the name of that officer to just stop him.
Not
shoot me.
Him. Don't point the finger at me because I'm talking to you. Quit pointing your finger.
Okay, I'm not pointing my finger. I'm asking you nicely. Right, your officer just pointed a gun directly in my face and told me he was going to shoot me with it. Over a light. That is a violation of my First Amendment right.
Are you done?
And I would just like his name.
Are we done now?
Not until...
Are we done now? Huh? Are we done now?
You're pointing a finger, says the cop. When cops have been pointing sniper rifles and machine guns, put that finger down! Turn that light off! They can't see when you have the light on. What does that mean, they can't aim? And by the way, the police captain, Captain Todd, never did follow up with the name of the police officer who reported, who threatened to murder that reporter on the spot where he stood. Still wondering, if, when, wherever the civil liberties organizations might be to file some Freedom of Information Act requests to find out the names of those officers whose photographs were taken aiming sniper rifles and machine guns at unarmed protesters. The world wonders. Hey, thanks very much to Sal, who is there most every evening. Thank you, Sal, for getting us started this evening. We're trying to raise our usual $150, and Sal has gotten us started. Thank you. Much appreciated. Yeah, the three journalists who were handcuffed, it's not like they came from the busted knuckle moral volcano and battle cry of freedom. Neil Munshie was from the Financial Times, Robert Klemko was from Sports Illustrated, and Rob Crilly was from the Telegraph. Those are the three that Captain Johnson had arrested for walking away not fast enough? Don't know. Yeah, just handcuffed them long enough to show them that, you know, we mean business here. It's been a long time since we've seen journalists behave like journalists in a situation such as this. But don't worry, there are, of course, people who are doing their dead level best to bring shame. Yeah, shame. To the craft. Guess who's gotten involved? Now he's not going to go out and get his hair mussed. I mean, there's a lot of money that goes into Sean Hannity's. It's a life support system for a haircut. And there's a lot of time and effort that goes into keeping it that way. So, what happens? Over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, which seems to be sort of earning that these days, the life support system for a haircut invited none other than the man who did as much or more short of actually pulling the trigger to create this mess in Ferguson, Missouri.
Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson was invited on to the life support system for a haircut show.
Welcome back to Hannity. Controversy continues to swirl in Ferguson, Missouri tonight around the shooting of Michael Brown, an unarmed black teenager who was shot multiple times by a Ferguson City police officer last Saturday. Now, a friend of Michael Brown.
God, I think they're, one of these days they're going to go, they're just going to turn Sean Hannity's hair into a topiary. I mean, it's amazing. You can't take your eyes off it.
Who says they witnessed the shooting, said that he was gunned down in cold blood. Take a look at what he said.
As he was running, the officer was trying to get out of the car, and once he got out the car, he pursued my friend, but his weapon was drawn. Now, he didn't see any weapon drawn at him or anything like that. Us going for no weapon. His weapon was already drawn when he got out the car. He shot again, and once my friend felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the air, and he started to get down, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots.
All right, joining me now to give his insight into what happened on that fateful Saturday afternoon, Ferguson City Police Chief Thomas Jackson. Mr. Jackson, welcome to the program. Thank you.
To give his version, Thomas Jackson, who wasn't there, who, for all we know, was the authority who sent the killer cop into hiding. Do tell, Chief.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
I read your public comments. They differ dramatically from what we just heard. And that is that you said, in fact, the officer was injured, had a facial wound of some kind, and that, in fact, a struggle ensued over the officer's weapon and a shot was actually fired inside the car. Why is there such a dramatically different story being told here?
Well, Sean, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait until all the witnesses have been interviewed and all the forensic evidence has been examined before we're going to have a real true picture of what happened that day.
Time it. Why is this guy on Hannity? That's not a rhetorical question. Why is this guy on Hannity? There is no... I don't think there's anyone in this country who follows news at all who doesn't understand the nature of the political divide that occurs between, say, Fox over there, you know, so far right that Barry Goldwater cringes in his grave. Right of Nixon. Right of... Jesus. Right of everybody. And yet this guy gladly accepts an invitation to appear on his program. That acceptance of the invitation is a thing in and of itself. This is a little piece of telegraphy. This is telling right-wing America whose side they're supposed to be on. Just remember, this segment was occupied a couple of months back by Cliven Bundy. Say it.
I mean, the people who were there all have different perspectives of what happened. And I know that the St. Louis County Police Department is doing a very thorough investigation. They're going to interview everybody. They're going to look at the ballistics. They're going to look at the gunshot wounds. And they're going to come to a conclusion and present their findings to the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney. And at that point, we will have a final decision.
Should the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney be involved? Now, I'm not saying there's anything in particular wrong with the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney, but the prosecuting attorney handles law enforcement actions in state court in St. Louis County involving every law enforcement agency in that county, up to and including the state police, highway patrol, whatever we're calling them in Missouri, but also including the Ferguson Police Department. If it is as it is in many jurisdictions, the prosecuting attorney of St. Louis County is in fact, and I'm sure there's a huge staff, I understand that, but he or she is in fact the chief law enforcement officer of the county, which means law enforcement, St. Louis County law enforcement, will investigate St. Louis County law enforcement, and that's disturbing to say the least. Yeah. So everybody has their own perceptions, and what the chief here is telling you, Thomas Jackson, is that they're going to work on making sure that we get the right perception. Now understand, the video of the young man of color, he's standing there, and it's in a live situation in the outdoors, and he's giving his account of what happened to his friend Michael Brown. He's standing there in a sleeveless tank top t-shirt. Meanwhile, Thomas Jackson appears, shot from about, viewed from about mid-chest up. He's got his white police uniform on. He's got his badge showing. So we get an immediate juxtaposition and an immediate creation of who it is we're supposed to believe. Laws of the communicative laws of primacy and recency come into play here.
Either a shot was fired inside the police officer's car or was not. Do we know for a fact?
It was,
That is a fact then. So there was a struggle for the gun.
Is a fact.
And are there witnesses that will say that there was a struggle for the gun?
I can't talk to what the witnesses are going to say, and the reason for that is...
There was. Yeah, I can't talk about it. Hey, where's the car? Has the community been told that the car, which apparently is going... what happened in it is going to be a central issue to determining what really happened here? Has the community been told that the car has been impounded and is in the care, custody, and control with a complete, total, accurate chain of custody and nobody involved with the investigation or from the Ferguson Police Department can get at the car? See, there's reason, whether it be hospital stuff, medical stuff, anything taken into anything that becomes evidence in a case has to have a clear chain of custody so that you can say that everybody knew exactly what it was that was being held, how long it was held, where it was held, who had access to what was held. Because otherwise, there's no transparency. And any jury that would be impaneled in the matter could easily be either deliberately or negligently misled.
As soon as this happened, I called the county police chief and asked him to take over the scene and the investigation so I could be certain that there was no appearance of impropriety, and I would know that... that a very thorough and complete investigation would be done, and we could get to the truth of what happened.
Can you?
Okay, so the St. Louis County folks have it. Maybe. This is the same St. Louis County law enforcement that rolled in freaking tanks and brought in machine gunners and snipers and trained them on unarmed citizens engaging in their First Amendment rights. Are we clear? Yeah.
Shed any light on why so many shots were fired?
No, I can't. I don't actually know how many were fired.
Well, six.
This time.
Do you suspect this has been...
And you know what? As compared with some police shootings, that's not a lot of bullets. Sometimes unarmed black men in this country get 52 bullets fired at them. Sometimes over 100. Six. Never mind that one is enough. And with regard to chain of custody, Jack in Shreveport points out, yeah, and of course, that chain of custody thing assumes that someone's buddy doesn't allow someone that shouldn't be there access to the evidence. Hey, you never do that. No. I mean, come on. Right? There's that old saying out there, the truth is the first casualty of war. It now appears that truth is the first casualty of police shootings. Truth is the first casualty of politics. Maybe we can just take off all the dependent clauses and just say truth is the first casualty. No, that's not either. Because Michael Brown was the first casualty. Has anyone asked, because it is impossible to follow all the coverage here. Has anyone posed the question, is the officer still in state? If it has been posed, I haven't heard it. Back to Chief Jackson. I wonder if they call him Stonewall. His name's Thomas Jackson, you know.
Reported 10 shots or more?
It's possible that many shots were fired.
Well, I assume you found shell casing. You know a certain amount. Do you have a range in which you know?
No, I can't talk to the evidence at all. That's the St. Louis County Police Department's investigation.
I understand that the police officer, there's been a lot of death threats against him, a lot of volatility. You've got the new Black Panther Party. Louis Farrakhan has spoken out.
Oh, for pity's sakes. They found some guy said, yeah, are you the new Black Panther Party? I'm him. And now, of course, they're showing something that's scrawled that says the only good cop is a dead cop. We don't even have any way of knowing that was actually Ferguson, Missouri. Because, you know, it's Fox. That could be the dumpster behind an apartment complex in, you know, Queens.
Out the Reverend Al Sharpton is there. You've had the chanting. The only, you know, we have a sign up there. The only good cop is a dead cop. There's been rioting and looting, etc., going on. Public's right to know versus the safety of the officer. You're balancing that.
I am.
And objection, leading the witness. Hint to future journalists.
in asking people questions, ask them questions, unless you're not interested in actually doing journalism and you're only there to put forward a specific point of view. Them questions that do not suggest, sir, you want them to give. Because that's not journalism. That's propaganda. We'll just go back. Let's check out Edward R. Murrow Knott again.
And looting, etc., going on, that has prevented you from releasing the name of the officer. That the public's right to know versus the safety of the officer. You're balancing that.
And that's exactly what we did. We had originally believed that.
Why not just let Hannity say that? I mean, because in other words, not in other words, but in those very words, Hannity just became his own witness. His own source. It is, of course, classic Fox behavior.
We had an obligation to release that information to the public and to the press. But what happened is another officer's name was released as being the officer involved in the shooting. He was not. But his picture was put up on the internet. His Facebook page was hacked, and death threats started coming in. So that's when we weighed the benefit of releasing the information right now versus the safety to the officer, his family, and his neighbors, and the rest of the police department. So we decided to delay the release of the name.
Let me ask you this one simple question. Based on your preliminary investigation, and you...
It's coming from a simple guy. It's kind of got to be a simple question, doesn't it?
Speaking with other officers that were on the scene, as I understand it, correct?
Yes.
Then are you convinced that the officer involved in the shooting was within department guidelines in protecting himself?
I can't answer that question until I have the final report from the county. I really don't want to say anything that I might know or that I think.
Unless it's something that you want, unless it's something part of something. Oh, definitely, fired inside the car, definitely. So Hannity says what he wants the Fox people to hear, the Fox audience. Did you hear that, Marvelline? And the chief says, can't say.
When I say something, I want to say what I know.
But you are certain that an altercation occurred and a shot was fired within the car, meaning Mr. Brown was in the car.
Wow! A shot. But you are certain a shot was fired and a shot was fired within the car, meaning Mr. Brown was in the car. Let's just make Sean Hannity the police chief of Ferguson.
At some point.
He was, yes.
And he was, yes, in other words, true. He wasn't handcuffed in the car. He went in the car of his own volition. Is that yours?
Yes.
All right.
See, it's kind of a mark of a non-journalist when in order to get answers, you have to give the answers to the source before the source gives them back to you. Yeah, Stockton Larry in the chat room pointing out, yes, the KKK is, in fact, already raising money for the officer who did the shooting. And in regard to the officer, Texas Betsy tells me, as of yesterday, the officer's on paid leave. Don't know where he is, though. Nobody does. If this is all going to be, if this is all going to be turned over to the St. Louis County prosecutor, doesn't it become, as the chief law enforcement of the officer of St. Louis County, doesn't the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney then have an affirmative duty to at least let the citizenry know that a man who may end up being charged with murder, although the likelihood of that, well, it's right up there with winning the lottery, or being struck by lightning. Isn't it incumbent upon the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney to at least, in the name of transparency, say the officer has not left the state, he has not left the long arm of the law, okay? Yeah, as Steve points out here, what we have here is a classic case of, Mr. Hannity, when did you stop beating your wife? So now that, hey, look, a new verb, everybody. Chief Jackson's been Bundyized. There it is. If you want, this guy is an actual newsmaker. If you want to produce news with him, you should theoretically he should be on a news program, not an opinion program. Chief Jackson should not have been booked, even on Fox, on a program in which the tagline out to the next break is coming up Ann Coulter. Or, you know, some other right-wing Herod. You get my meaning.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on Earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right.
In articles acknowledging the one-year anniversary of the assault on Gaza, blunt and unsparing language is rare. Despite sympathy and support for the Palestinian people, the description of what took place in January 2009 is sometimes buffered by a misguided sense of political correctness. Yes, it's terrible. Yes, it is unjust. But we don't want to be inflammatory or risk offending the sensitivities of those who, through their own willful ignorance, cling to the notion that Israel is a victim state, fighting for its very survival. This commentary is more forthright. Gaza, in plain language. The sociopathic Zionist administration of Israel, as part of its continuing brutal colonization of Palestine, deliberately devastated the already nearly incapacitated infrastructure which supports the existence of 1.5 million refugees. The people of Gaza, second, third, and fourth generation dispossessed Palestinians, are living in forced exile from land their families inhabited and cultivated for generations. Half of them are children under the age of 15. Their culture and their economy has been systematically ravaged by Israel for decades, and since 2006, a criminal siege, supported by the United States, as well as much of the international community, has deprived them of all but the most minimal resources for subsistence. This oppressed and brutalized population was bombed, bulldozed, and terrorized mercilessly for 23 days. What follows is a small sampling of facts concerning the barbaric actions which one of the most powerful military machines in the world took against a captive and defenseless population. If the reality presented here goes beyond the stretch of your imagination, you can verify the data yourself with a few simple Google searches. Though you'd better hurry, much of this information seems to be disappearing down Google's memory hole, just as is the fate of the people of Gaza. You may discover that exact figures vary somewhat depending on the source, but whether it was 21,000 structures or 22,000 structures destroyed, whether 280 schools were destroyed or badly damaged versus 230, the overwhelming truth of the physical devastation which took place in Gaza and the fact that this destruction was deliberate and premeditated is irrefutable. Even the Goldstone Report, itself a document with severe pro-Zionist overtones issued by a declared Zionist and a supporter of Israel, states unequivocally, "The deliberate actions of the Israeli forces and the declared policies of the government of Israel cumulatively indicate the intention to inflict collective punishment on the people of the Gaza Strip in violation of international humanitarian law." We've heard, time and again, that more than 1,400 Palestinians were killed, over 80% of them civilians, including 342 children. These figures have become a familiar talking point in discussions of last year's assault, so much so that they may have lost their impact. But what we are not often reminded of is the horrific level of carefully planned destruction of civilian infrastructure in Gaza, orchestrated by Israel during Operation Cast Lead. Financed and armed by the United States, the Israeli military destroyed 15% of the structures in Gaza, approximately 22,000 buildings, including 5,300 housing units, destroyed or subject to major damage. Another 52,000 homes received some form of structural damage. Over 200 factories and 700 stores and businesses were destroyed or badly damaged. Of the residences, factories, and businesses completely destroyed, 1,300 of the homes and approximately 25% of the commercial property were deliberately and painstakingly bulldozed or exploded by Israeli ground forces. 8 hospitals and 26 primary health care clinics were damaged or destroyed. More than 280 schools were damaged or destroyed. Water and sewage treatment facilities, as well as electricity infrastructure, were deliberately targeted, leaving vast segments of the population with little or no power or clean water for the duration of the assault and for weeks and months to follow. Massive amounts of agricultural lands were systematically bombed or bulldozed.
When the Israelis invaded the Gaza Strip, they came straight in here. I've covered earthquakes, hurricanes, and the tsunami. And what has happened here is as bad or worse than anything I've seen in any of those. And this was done by Israeli bulldozers.
Some estimates suggest that as much as 80% of the arable land in Gaza has been ruined or declared off-limits to the people of Gaza over the last decade. 2 million liters of wastewater from Gaza City's sewage treatment plant, bombed during the assault, leaked into surrounding agricultural land, making it unusable. An Israeli television station boasted that Israeli warplanes alone, without accounting for tank, ground troop and warship ammunition, dropped approximately 1,000 tons of bombs on Gaza during Operation Cast Lead. The effort involved months, if not years, of carefully considered target selection, giving the lie to any claim that the devastation was incidental.
We are trying to avoid any kind of civil casualties.
Zaitun, also flattened by Israeli bulldozers. But in this house, they'd herded 100 members of the Samuni clan, and then they shelled it, killing 49 of them.
We are trying to avoid any kind of civil casualties.
It requires a stunning level of denial and self-delusion to pretend that the destruction which was achieved in Gaza had anything to do with Israel's security or the targeting of Hamas militants. This was savage and barbaric collective punishment unleashed on a civilian population, nothing less. Any suggestion to the contrary must be sharply and immediately ridiculed as absurd. This was arguably the first aerial bombing campaign ever conducted on a defenseless civilian population held captive within a fenced enclosure and not allowed to escape the assault. It is a measure of the cynical mindset of the Israeli military that leaflets were sometimes dropped in neighborhoods about to be bombed, suggesting the residents flee. "We are about to destroy your home. You had better get out." "Flee to where? Gazans are not allowed to leave their open-air prison, not even when under attack." This tactic on the part of Israel also gives the lie to the claim that homes and buildings were targeted because there were Hamas militants hiding inside them. Why then warn them to leave before destroying the structures? Given this litany of horror and the coldly premeditated nature of its execution, we must ask, what kind of society condones this level of brutality? What precedent is there for such monstrous disregard for the basic tenets of human decency? Unfortunately, we need look no further than the behavior of the United States, Israel's staunch supporter and mentor. In Iraq, the toll of U.S. militarism is well over a million lives, and a large part of the infrastructure of a nation of 26 million people has been ruined. And what of Gaza today, 1 year later? Israel's continued illegal siege, enabled by the United States and the U.S. client state, Egypt, has prevented any substantial amount of building material from entering Gaza. Essentially, no reconstruction has been possible. The people of Gaza live amidst the rubble created by Israeli hatred and aggression. They are attempting to rebuild their communities using mud bricks and whatever can be salvaged from the wreckage. The next time someone argues Israel has a right to defend itself or attempts to use the abusive spouse defense, "Look what you made me do."
"They are forcing us to kill their children to defend our children."
Tell them no. Tell them there can never be any acceptable justification for the deliberate devastation of an entire society. It is unconscionable. It is wrong. Plainly put, there is no sane argument in favor of such behavior. Those who believe there is should be rebuked and must be vigorously opposed.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan! We hate niggers, we hate Jews, we hate faggots, and we hate specs! We people need to get off your ass and wake up! This is America!
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is Radio Angra Indian. Angra Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Tell them that we need to get out of here.
5 days in this motherfucking attic. Can't use the cell phone, I keep getting static. Dying cause they lying instead of telling us the truth. Other day the helicopters got my neighbors off the roof. Cool cause they said they coming back for us too. That was 3 days ago, I don't see no rescue. See a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do. Since God made the path and I'm trying to walk through. What? Swam to the store trying to look for food. Corner store's kinda flooded so I broke my way through. I got what I could but before I got through, the news said police shot a black man trying to leave. Don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like
people.
I ain't saying he a gold
digger.
He ain't looking for no broke niggas.
And rather than do anything else, they set up a vast illegal smuggling network through an archipelago of nonprofit organizations that were there specifically to steal World War II surplus and channel it to Jewish fighters in Palestine. Some of the material was bought for cents on the dollar. Some of the material was stolen outright from the U.S. Marines in Hawaii, as was the case of Nathan Lifford. 50 caliber machine guns, materials and manpower for Palestine, stole the entire list from the U.S. chaplain so that they could recruit more effectively in sending veterans of World War II to fight in Palestine. The Sonnenborn Institute, which was organized by former Zionist Organization of America chair, was very effective in channeling via second and third countries all sorts of tank, ammunition, aircraft, explosives, and was able to get it for pennies on the dollar, completely in violation of the Arms Export Control Act and all sorts of laws, including the Neutrality Act. They cared little about Americans shipping material inside of boilers, inside of mismarked boxes dropping onto piers in New York. They didn't care about that because they had a higher purpose. That purpose was to win a state, and they were successful. If we look at some of the activities inside the Justice Department to cover up all of this, what you see is a very effective counterforce. Whenever the FBI was getting close, and there's a 7,000-page file in the National Archives with surveillance photographs of B-17s and materials and guns moving through the U.S. logistics system, what you would find is in the Justice Department's own files, lobbyists such as Abraham Feinberg, the Uber lobbyist, cash bundling king, would assemble a war chest and mobilize people to quash prosecutions. They had 100 people they were going to arrest and prosecute on the West Coast alone. Never happened. There were only a handful of people who actually suffered any felony convictions, relatively low-level people. The big fish of the Jewish agency, Nahum Bernstein, writing the checks from New York, never indicted. And this was because there was a vast amount of influence over the president, a vast amount of access to the Justice Department Attorney General. And so the basic advice and consent rights of Americans were fundamentally undermined. They had no choice. They had no say in what was happening to this military equipment. That had been decided for them, and the necessary prosecutions didn't happen. Hank Greenspun, he has a balcony on Pennsylvania Avenue named after him at the museum, became rich smuggling weapons to Palestine. He offered $25,000 to many people in Washington to quash those prosecutions, only got a felony. Well, some of these people graduated. One of the